Hello and a very warm welcome to another episode of the Get Football Tactics podcast. I'm your host Neil Shilath, and as always, I'm delighted to say I have been joined by Alex Barker. How are you, Alex?
Hello, Neil. I'm very good. I'm very sleepy because I spent all night playing Batman, but I'm good.
Did you enjoy getting cooked on Twitter for your entirely incorrect pronunciation of FB ref?
Some say I got cooked. Some say that, you know, when the whole world tells you you're wrong, you've just got to stick your heels in the ground and say I am right. And that is exactly how I feel about foot breath.
Oh my god.
And dunft.
Oh god, I don't know which one is worse. That is
dunft is a bit more comedic. I'll give you that. I say dunft. Yeah, I will happily admit dunft is wrong, but I say it more comedic. Foot breath.
It's wrong.
It's the letters are arranged. If they called people, it FB ref, they have a space and a hyphen.
I have been in calls with people from Sports Reference, and they call it FB ref.
Well, they should put a hyphen in their title, shouldn't they? they should have it as F hyphen B hyphen ref.
You know what? I'll speak to them and I'll let them.
Yeah, that's a design flaw. Maybe you should hand it to their marketing department and see if they can sort that one out.
Yeah, I'll do that. Anyway, we haven't got Varun Vasudevan with us today, so it'll just be the two of us diving straight into the episode. And we are going to be talking about Fiorentina this week, specifically to focus on their head coach Vincenzo Italiano, who will reportedly leave at the end of the season. And he's been a figure who's been doing some interesting things over the last couple of years. And he has been linked on and off to some clubs. Obviously, now it looks like he will be going somewhere. So we'll analyze what he's done at Fiorentina. And then we'll finally, obviously, discuss where he might or should perhaps end up next. So yeah, as always, first things first, let's just get a bit of background. First on Fiorentina. La Viola, as they're called, they were formed almost 100 years ago, and they have a few titles in their cabinet, a couple of Serie A's in the 50s and 60s, I think six Coppa Italias, mostly through that period, and then a couple in like 1996 and 2001. But then, I think it was actually in 2001 or 2, when they basically went bankrupt, because of mismanagement, all that. And then they were essentially had to basically reform in the lower tier, I think in the fourth tier, as many teams do, especially these days. So then from there, they came back, obviously new ownership. From there, they quickly bounced back up to Serie A. And then in 2019, the club was sold to Rocco Commisso, if I'm saying that right. And he has been in charge for the last 4 odd years. And Vincenzo Italiano was the first, I think it's fair to say, the first good managerial appointment in the Commisso era. So Italiano has been in charge since 2021 at Fiorentina. So he'll complete 3 full seasons at the end of this one. And quick bit of background on him. Oh, yes, fun fact. Maybe you know this, Alex, but do you know where he was born?
Vincenzo Italiano?
Yeah.
Wasn't he born in Germany?
Yeah, he was, exactly. Yeah, exactly, he was. And I think the other one's Domenico Tedesco, was born in Italy or something. But yeah, Italiano was born in Karlsruhe, in Germany. But he did play in Italy throughout his career, mostly at Hellas Verona and then a few other clubs. Largely in Serie B, a few seasons in Serie A. And then he transitioned to coaching in like 2014 onwards. He firstly came through the lower tiers, amateur clubs. Then he had a job in Serie D, then Serie C with Trapani. I think a season where he impressed and got picked up by Spezia, who were in Serie B back then in 2019. I think in his first season, he got them promoted. Second season, he stayed up, which was a pretty good achievement given Spezia's sort of stature and budget and that sort of stuff. So after that, he was picked up by Fiorentina, where he has been since. He's taken them, in both of his seasons, he's taken them to Europe by qualifying to the league. And last season, obviously, he took them to 2 cup finals, the Europa Conference League and the Coppa Italia, but they lost both of them. So that's a bit of background on Fiorentina and Italiano. Now let's dive into the interesting stuff, which is their tactics. I think the most impressive or interesting, certainly, part of Italiano's Fiorentina is how they operate in possession. They're a pretty unique team. I think we're seeing some of his principles spreading a bit more, which we'll touch on. But what Fiorentina have been doing for the last two or three years has been very unique. So in possession, they generally, on paper, their formation is like a 4-2-3-1 or something. But in possession, they mainly use like a 4-3-3 variation. But last couple of seasons especially, this was extremely fluid. There were loads of rotations. So obviously, when you think of a 4-3-3 shape in possession, generally looks something like a 2-3-2-3. But for Fiorentina, what you usually got is quite often one or even both of the fullbacks would stay deep, almost like very wide, but next to the center backs, basically. Or at other times, one would invert into midfield to form a double pivot. And quite often, you got a center back pushing up, stepping into midfield, or even carrying the ball all the way into the opposition half and further, or even off the ball, making those forward runs. And that's something, of course, now we see quite popularly at Thiago Motta's Bologna. But I think the point to note with Fiorentina is that whereas Bologna mostly use the centre-back rotations for their build-ups, like from goal kicks and stuff, they do use it further as well at times, but mostly from there, Fiorentina almost exclusively use it further up the pitch, like I would say in the middle third and onwards. And so they use it to sort of manipulate their opponent's blocks, obviously create openings and that sort of stuff, but not really as much for build-up. Although you do see the centre-back pushing up a bit at times, he doesn't go all the way. So that was the most interesting rotation. But then around that, you had a lot going on. Like I said, the fullbacks coming deeper, inverting, even the number eights would rotate with the defensive midfielder, for example, or drop back. So there's a lot going on, and they were really good at progressing the ball over the last couple of seasons. And also, because of all this fluidity, caused problems in opposition defenses. They were a decent attacking team, certainly fun to watch, and did create a decent amount as well. But now, moving on to this season, there's been an interesting switch. They've switched to basically a somewhat less fluid structure. This season, what we see is that their number eights, as opposed to sort of coming back and rotating with the defensive midfielder, or basically, offering passing options from the back, this season their number eights start very high. And I think the most indicative sort of fact there is that Lucas Beltran, a striker they signed from River Plate, I believe, like I said, they signed him as a striker, he wears number 9, but Italiano has used him effectively as the number 10 in his formation and as a very advanced right-sided 8 in possession. And so obviously when you have someone like that, he's not going to drop back and help basically build up or progress the ball, right? He's just someone who's going to stay high and then help in the final third. But, so obviously the fullback rotations have been maintained. The centre-backs we still see stepping into midfield. But there's less fluidity, basically, in the centre with the number 8s. And I think that is what has had an impact on their attack. And I think Alex has some numbers to back that up. So what have you found, Alex?
Yeah, I've found their attack is bad, to put it shortly. So they're averaging about 1.09 non-penalty goals per 90, which was quite like mid-table-ish, Fiorentina. What's a really bad stat, and for anyone who's listened to this podcast, many of the tactics or data podcasts a lot, they'll know that averaging 0.08 non-penalty goals per shot is a very low number, extremely low. Most teams are like 0.9 is generally the lowest I see, but it tends to be like between 0.11 and like 0.14. And of course, we're talking in minor decimal points, but another stat to back us up is, according to Who Scored, Fiorentina spend the least time in the league in the final third, despite holding the third most possession. So clearly, they have a problem of not only creating chances, but, you know, getting the ball into dangerous areas in the first place to potentially create chances. Another stat to back this up is the fact that since Dusan Vlahovic left, who obviously was, you know, a top scorer for a few seasons running, that top scorer in the league since he left, which was January of 2022, I think, their top scorer is Nicolas Gonzalez with 12 goals in that time. 6 goals this season, 6 goals last season. And it's not necessarily a case of them spreading the goals around the squad either. There's like 6, 5, 4. A few players have got 6 this season. It's quite a big drop-off. And I think as well, it goes back to what you were talking about as well. I think you spoke about the high 8s. I think the problem is their 8s are players who some teams might even have as a 6. You've got the Brazilian Arthur, who, you know, very, very good for regulating the tempo of play, not necessarily a creative player. You've got Benaventura as well. Again, I've never really seen him used like as the more attacking midfielder in his career, or at least in my light Serie A watching over the last few years. So again, you're looking at that and thinking, is this, you know, where is the creativity coming from? And when you watch them, the result is quite easy to see. They're a team that crossed the third most in the league because they struggled to create chances, like clean chances into the box. They often end up with the ball in wide areas and popping it in, hoping for a chance to be created. And the end result of that is that they end up pushing a lot of players forward, which means their rest defence gets left in like a 2-1 shape. 2 defenders, 1 midfielder. Which, whenever you see a team doing that, just know they're very susceptible to counter-attacks. And that's exactly what's happened to Fiorentina. And I think it's why they've dropped points against Empoli, home and away. Juventus, who, yeah, are a top side, but as we've covered, are just, you know, steroid West Ham. Frosinone, Sassuolo, Udinese, Lecce and Torino. But they've gained points against the like of Napoli, or like one rather, against Napoli, Lazio, Atalanta. So they're in a bit of a odd place. And the question for Italiano, you know, when judging his coaching credentials and seeing what club he can go to, and the question I have for you is this a talent problem or is it a coaching problem?
Yeah, that is, like you said, that is the big question. And I think, honestly, the answer to these ones is always a bit of both. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, a coach's job is to get the most out of, you know, what he's got or what they've got. And I think with Italiano this season especially, like I said, last couple of seasons, I thought they did, you know, really well. They were really exciting. But this season, I think you can ask questions if he's done the best with what he's got. I mean, they're still competing for, you know, the Europa. I mean, they're still like in the conversation for the Europa Conference League spot in the table. But like we said, they're not exactly playing the best way. They have clear weaknesses, both in and consequently out of possession with the rest defense. The decision to sort of switch that and switch to those very high eights, lose that fluidity, which was really so important for them to progress the ball and then eventually create chances, is confusing. And I think, yeah, honestly, that's the main thing I would say. Because like you said, so like take, for example, Arthur, right? So, I mean, he has used him as a 6 pretty often as well this season, but he does use him as an 8 too. So now if you use him as an 8, it makes sense to use him as, you know, one of the deeper number 8s who comes back, rotates with the defensive midfielder, because that's the sort of areas he thrives in. But if you push him up, then you're just limiting him. And it's like tactically as well, the team isn't even getting better. And the same can be said of Beltran, for example, who's a striker. You're using him as a very advanced 8. So you're taking away some of the threat he might be able to pose right like at the top of the line. And obviously he's not going to come back and support either. I think Buenaventura, yeah, I think I really like Buenaventura, like as a player. I really enjoy watching him. But he's a guy who's, I mean, for me, he's a high risk creator sort of guy, right? So he will always look for those killer passes. And then obviously that, I mean, that's naturally, he's going to lose the ball a lot of times, but that's just the way he plays. But then again, for that as well, you need to have those mechanisms, like with the rest defense, to ensure that even if you lose the ball, you have someone back there to sort of clean things up. And I think ultimately, because of their central progression weaknesses and everything, I think one stat that sums things up about sort of where Fiorentina are at in terms of their creation is the fact that their highest creator is Cristiano Biraghi in terms of the number of chances created. And he's a very good player as well. He takes some very good set pieces, but also he just has to, I mean, they have to resort to him spamming a lot of crosses from the left flank because they can't do anything else. And yeah, I mean, even, you know, even like, I think like a cross heavy team isn't necessarily bad in itself, but with Fiorentina, the question is, who's there in the box to attack those crosses? They don't really have a big target. Mbala and Zola is the only striker, I would say, in that team who you could even, I mean, remotely call a sort of target. And he's not really a cross target. He's more of a target striker for like long balls and stuff. He's not someone who's going to get a lot of headers in the box either, like maybe Vlahovic might have.
That might be a good point to hop in with. Like the other problem, the problem with this that you are a source of the issue with this, I think it might be partly a recruitment problem as well. I think they've been looking for the wrong player. I'm going to go through quickly now their signings they've made over the last three seasons. So since Vlahovic left, I said he left in January 2022. That is correct. So from that January, they signed Arthur Cabral, Jonathan Ikone, which, yep, fair, he's a bit more of an attack creator pair. Christoph Piatek, another striker. Cabral, if it wasn't clear, sorry, was a Brazilian striker coming from FC Basel, a lot of potential. Then that summer, they signed Dodo from Shakhtar, right back. They signed Antonio Balak. I can barely even remember where he plays, to be fair. Josip Brekalo, a bit more of a creative player. Luka Jovic, another sort of failed striker, a bit like Christoph Piatek. And then last summer, they signed Lucas Beltran, as you said, another forward. Alan Bianzolo, another forward. And Andrea Belotti, another forward. And in terms of midfielders, they signed Arthur Melo, who, as we've said, is just more of like the purest passing eight ever. And Maxime Lopez, who has also been a bit of a kind of hit of this player. Feels like they put a lot of energy into signing strikers and not a lot of energy into signing quality players to create their chances. So maybe even the tactics are kind of a response to this recruitment.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I was looking at that, like their sort of succession plan, so to speak, for Vlahovic. And yeah, like you say, I think there's not much of a plan going on there. They're just signing people and hoping someone sticks. And well, to be fair, when I look back, I think Arthur Cabral was the same window as Vlahovic left, right? I think that's a fair signing because he was really exciting at Basel. And at that time, I think you could have seen him being a good replacement. So fair enough. But once but
that,
he
I think was, that's the pop. So I think that's the problem, right? It's like, like not all of those players are bad, despite my negative outlook. Cabral, you can find tweets of me saying this guy's really good. Like this guy, he was just too good for the Swiss league. He scored like two overhead kicks from outside of the box in his final season. He was an absolute joke. So it's like clearly not all of these players are bad. It's like there's something else at play here.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's a difficult one because what I was gonna say is, like Cabral, I get, and for whatever reason he didn't work out. But then after him, I don't see a striker who is a perfect fit for the way Fiorentina want to play, and obviously like up there qualitatively as well. That's a bit puzzling. When you have that when you don't have a pure number nine that the team needs, when you don't have the sort of creative players feeding into them, I think that eventually is what results to the 0.08 NPXT per shot that you mentioned. And I think, I mean, I don't have the numbers, but I think a good chunk of that is basically Nico Gonzalez cutting inside to the left, from the right rather, and shooting whenever he gets a look at goal. But and I think that's honestly, like you said, he's been their top scorer, hasn't he, since Vlahovic left. So yeah, I think they're basically their best avenue of goals has been Nico Gonzalez cutting inside and shooting or getting in the box. But obviously that's not a good look when you've sort of gone away from, or rather when you want to replace a really good striker. But you know, on the, if you flip this around, this also begs the question, maybe, and I wonder if you have any thoughts on this, but do you then possibly think that Vlahovic obviously was the guy there at Fiorentina in Italiano's first season. Do you think Vlahovic's qualities maybe in a way inflated how good Italiano's Fiorentina was in his first season?
A little. I wouldn't say completely yes, because that, well, actually, not Vlahovic himself, but he scored a lot of penalties, right?
Yeah.
And maybe need to revisit the penalty numbers. Maybe Fiorentina just got above average penalties in that time. but that comes down to them getting more into the box, right?
Yeah.
So perhaps they generally were just a better team with Vlahovic. So yeah, it's hard to say inflated, but you know, it is clear that since they've lost Vlahovic, they've just not been able to score as many goals, and like it's been a problem they just continually haven't solved.
Yeah, it's a puzzling one. And actually, I think we've got our timelines wrong, because Vlahovic's last season is 2020-21.
Oh, my apologies.
Yeah, so wait, but I distinctly remember him leaving in the winter as well. So wait, let me double check this. But yeah, I mean, either way, obviously Italian didn't have a great deal of time with Vlahovic, but I think just generally when we look at Fiorentina's attack, yeah, he did leave in Jan 22 actually. So yeah, I don't know what I'm saying.
Yeah, but yeah, don't go at me.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, he had half a season then basically. But yeah, I think if we just look at sort of Fiorentina's attack in general, I do think Vlahovic also, I don't know what the best way to phrase it, but basically the thing with Vlahovic is he's not good at a few things as well, but he's an exceptional ball striker, and he did score a lot of penalties. But I also think he scored a fair few from outside the box, or from, let's say, not the best positions, and maybe that made them look, you know, a bit better than they actually were. So yeah, it is a difficult one, but it's, I mean, I do think, because even after he left, right, 21-22 and then 22-23, their attack was still decent. So I do think ultimately, though, the biggest issue has been this tactical switch we discussed, the high eights and then the lack of rotations and then lack of progression, lack of creation, or rather loss of all that, not entire lack, obviously. So I do think ultimately it is a tactical decision, and which has led to most of this drop off. And to be honest, I can't really wrap my head around what the thinking was, because it's not even like he doesn't have the profiles, as we discussed, because if anything, he has more profiles to play with deeper rates. So yeah, it's a puzzling one. Certainly maybe something for other teams to look at, but I guess maybe we should move on now and focus on the other big aspect, which is obviously how Fiorentina operate out of possession. And I think in this respect, they've been consistent. And I think they've been consistently pretty good, or rather consistent in how they operate in this respect. So generally with Fiorentina, what you get is, they start high up the pitch against goal kicks and that sort of stuff. Generally, it's a 4-4-2 structure, or rather 4-4-2 base structure. And then it switches around a fair bit depending on how the opposition is building up. For essentially player marking. So, for example, if the opposition is building up with a 2-3 base, so a 4-3-3 formation, then what you might actually see is a 4-1-3-2 type of press from Fiorentina. So one of the midfielders pushes up onto the opposition's defensive midfielder to player mark, and then basically limit their passing options and press. And they have been pretty good, pretty successful with their press. They have the most high turnovers in Serie A this season. They have the lowest PPDA. But what they don't have is shot and goal-ending high turnovers. They have 261 high turnovers, which is, like I said, the best in Serie A. But then they only have 38 shot-ending high turnovers, which is like 8th. So there's again an issue with the conversion of even possession, like dangerous recoveries, into shots, which again in the context of this season probably ties into their lack of, let's say, out and out striker. So that's their press. So, I mean, I think we can say that they're a very good pressing team. They do disrupt build-ups very well. And don't make it easy for teams to play out against them. So I think, again, from a coaching point of view, I think Italiano does a pretty good job in setting up his presses. And then when they drop back, they generally drop into like a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-1-4-1 mid-block, again, depending on how the opposition is setting up. And yeah, they try to be as compact as possible. And yeah, I mean, basically keep things tight. You don't really... I mean, certainly their sort of preferred defensive approach is to press. So you don't see them sort of staying in a block for too long. But yeah, that's in short how they defend. Alex, do you have any thoughts on that, or have you looked at any numbers?
I've basically looked at the same numbers as you. Yeah, it's just, again, it's so telling how they're top for high turnovers, and then if I click shot ending on Opta Analyst, boom, they fall to
drop back.
Yeah, like 9th or something. It's which is quite unusual, to be fair, because I can't remember a team we covered when I was on before who were a bit like this, where they might have been Bologna. In fact, no, it wasn't, because I can check, and they're not near the top shot ending high turnovers. But the point I was going to make is, you typically see a team that struggles with a deep block, like, use their out of possession to be their biggest, like, tool to create chances. So it's, I guess, a little worrying that Fiorentina just seem to, like, their tools are just there to seeming dominate possession, but not necessarily get into dangerous areas.
Yeah, and even if you, I mean, like you say, when, like, a team struggles against low blocks, they have to look for sort of alternative ways to create, right? And this may be slightly off topic, but even if you look at like set pieces, for example, I don't think you can say they leverage set pieces to the best. They're the best team at defending set pieces in Serie A, by the way. But they're, again, pretty mid when it comes to attacking them. So they don't create a great deal, again, from set pieces either. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, I think part of it certainly is down to players. But you do have to... I mean, certainly the possession stuff is down to the coach a fair bit. Set pieces is also very coaching focused. Out of possession is a very weird one, because I mean, when you won the ball high up there, I mean, yeah, just pass it a couple of times and shoot, but yeah, probably a bit.
Yeah, like winning the ball high and just turning around.
Yeah, exactly. Just turn around and shoot me. I don't know, but and it's not even like they sort of try to overplay and all pass too many times and get in the box, because I mean, like we've seen with their NPXG per shot numbers, they're pretty happy to shoot from range. So it's I mean, yeah, the shooting issue or the chance creation issues are really puzzling, and something you do see throughout throughout their game wherever you look. But yeah, sort of back on the defense out of possession point, rather, they're ultimately their sort of XG conceded and goals conceded is again pretty mid-table. The 10th this season, at the time at least, as we record this, in terms of XG conceded in Serie A, so like perfectly mid-table. And yeah, that's down to, I would say, obviously one is when they press, you are obviously susceptible to getting played through. And again, they don't have the strongest individual defenders, obviously, you know, given their stature and everything, where they are in the league. And yeah, I mean, their block isn't the most formidable block you'll ever see. You can play through it as well. And again, yeah, I would say their back four isn't always the best defensively either. So yeah, but at least what we can say with their defense is that they've consistently been a good pressing team. And I would say with better defenders, for example, Italiano's team starts looking better defensively, basically. So I think this aspect is not something that his sort of potential next employers should be that worried about. But yeah, the present stuff certainly is something concerning. So unless you have anything to add, Alex. Oh yeah, I think one final point, which again, I think basically wraps up what everything we've been discussing, is that in the last couple of seasons, his last two, obviously his only two full seasons at Fiorentina so far, Fiorentina were very much among the top seven or within the top six, even in terms of expected goal difference as well. So they obviously could qualify for Europe, and they were competing with the top seven teams in Serie A. Obviously not with the league leaders, but you know, whoever was down there, like Roma, Atalanta sometimes, Lazio sometimes, they were at a pretty similar level to them, so which is obviously decent enough for them. So that's a, yeah, I think we can say that's a good job. But this season, they are, like I said, they're still just a few points off, but their underlying numbers have dropped off. And they're like properly mid-table in terms of underlying, in terms of XGD. So again, that basically goes to illustrate everything we said about this. So changes in possession, you know, not adequately replacing some of the key departures, because even this summer they lost a few important, or rather, I mean, the summer before the season, they lost a few important players. So yeah, it's a difficult one to assess what's gone wrong this season. But before we get on to where we think Italiano should go next, with all this considered, we're taking a slight detour and looking at a few players who, yeah, I mean, who I think obviously might not go with him where he goes next, but a few clubs should keep an eye on. So let's begin with Nicolas Gonzalez, man we have spoken about a bit. Like Alex said, the top scorer for the club in the league since Vlahovic left. And yeah, he's an exciting player, I'd say. He is only 26 years old still. He joined them from Stuttgart a couple of seasons ago in 2021, so the same time as Italiano. And he has very much been Italiano's first choice right winger throughout his tenure. He's pretty versatile in that you can get him to start, you know, very wide outright, receive, isolate a fullback, dribble, jump inside to his left and shoot. Certainly gets a lot of shots off there. Hasn't actually scored from outside the box in the league this season, so you do wonder how effective that is. But I think maybe when you think of this stereotypical left-footed right winger who cuts inside and shoots a lot, Gonzalez is not exactly that player as well, because he actually is really good at getting into the box, attacking crosses at the far post, or even just getting into central areas at the end of cutbacks and stuff. And in fact, he scored 3 headed goals this season. So he is a box threat as well, which maybe you wouldn't think of from a winger generally. And yeah, he's, like I said, he's very good on the ball. He dribbles really well, good close control, has very good switches with his left again. So a pretty well-rounded player in possession. I think the aspect where he isn't that great is chance creation, probably. And I think that's mainly to do, obviously, with the fact that, again, he cuts inside a lot. So then he doesn't use his right foot a lot. He rarely goes down and, you know, puts something in. So that's probably the main reason behind that. But yeah, I think he's an exciting player, worth keeping an eye on for some teams, because he has, I mean, besides just being a dribbly winger, he has a genuine goal threat, which he can add as well. So that's Nicolas Gonzalez. Let's go on now to another Argentine, Lucas Martinez Quarta. Alex has been looking at his FBref profile and reportedly laughing. What have you seen, Alex?
Yeah, so I haven't watched so much of... Well, when I watched Fiorentina, I haven't really focused much on Lucas Martinez Quarta, because, I don't know, you don't tend to focus on centre-backs for individual players, but... No, I've seen his FBref profile, and now I want to revisit him, because obviously we don't do analysis just based off FBref profiles. This is just a guide, and it's just very funny. He's in the top 2 percentiles for non-penalty goals, obviously compared to centre-backs, and he's in like the top 10 for like non-penalty XG and shots still around that. And you're thinking, well, this guy must be, you know, a towering player at set pieces or something. But as we discussed, Fiorentina are quite mid at set pieces, and Lucas is like 5'11" or 5'11½", as many not 6 foot guys would like to play. So yeah, he's like on that end. It's like, right, okay, you're looking a bit weird there. Then you go into like his more progressive stats. He's in the top like 3 and then 7 percentiles for progressive passes and successful take-ons, which is just dribbles. So you think, what the hell are you doing there? And he's still like ranking really nice on like tackles, interceptions, and blocks. So he's got like the profile of like an all-round midfielder, just at centre back compared to other centre backs. I now want to go back and watch him more and see why he's got the numbers that he has. Because he must be doing everything in this side.
Yeah, I think what you said there, the fact that he almost has an all-round midfield profile is probably the explanation, because I think he is the guy who, certainly when he's starting, he's very much the centre-back who steps into midfield a lot for those rotations. So I think that, and if anything, that, I mean, he probably sometimes does end up in the box as well. So I imagine a decent, or at least a few of his shots have come from open play getting into the box. So that's probably where that's, because like you say, he's not very tall, not the biggest set piecer. In fact, I can check that. Oh yeah, 2 of his 4 league goals this season have come from regular play, which is not set pieces. So there you have, and both of them in the box.
So what genius site did you use to check that in the half a second you said, oh, in fact, I can check that. Yeah, here it is.
FartMob. They've recently added the like shot profiles for players. And then on their website, they've got the breakdown. So like set piece, regular play from corner. In fact, they've also got like right foot, left foot, head. So it's actually really useful. So there
well,
you go.
If we were sponsored by FartMob, this would be the ideal place to say we're sponsored.
So listen, FartMob, if you want to sponsor us, you know where to find us. But yeah, anyway, so I think that, and then yeah, his sort of rotations into midfield and stuff probably is what get him a lot of those progressive passes and take-ons. And then, Fiorentina sort of pressing and aggressive approach gets him those tackles and interceptions. But yeah, very interesting profile, most definitely. All right, let's move on to another Argentine. Lucas Beltran is certainly a player to watch in this side. He has scored 6 league goals this season and also has a couple assists. So one of the key players in attack. Like I said, he signed from River Plate this summer. And yeah, I think the reason I've brought him is, like I've mentioned, he's been used very interestingly because he came in as a striker, having played as such in Argentina, but has been used as a really advanced 8. And, well, I mean, obviously debatable whether that's the best use of his skill set, but he's done a pretty good job there, I would say. He's been secure enough on the ball, created a decent amount. He's received well and turned in tight spaces and stuff. So he is an interesting profile. I mean, I do wonder, he's still what, only like 22, 23 years old. And obviously he is, he's pretty clinical in the box. And his 6 goals have come from 3.29 XG. Obviously that is a very small sample size. But if you look at his finishing in general, he, especially with his right foot, he does pack a punch and have good accuracy. So like even in Argentina in 2023, for example, the first half of the season, he scored 12 goals from 7.91 XG. So I think you can expect him to overperform XG by some amount. I think it's interesting if or when he does move on, let's say. I'd be interested to see how he's used by, or even next, if he's at Fiorentina next season with a new manager coming in, I'd be interested to see how he's used, because he has those striker-like qualities, but he can also drop off and link up. So maybe as a freer 9 who has freedom to drop off, or maybe in a 2-striker system where he's sort of the more connecting second striker. It's an interesting one. So yeah, I think that's all we've got for players. There's a few other exciting youngsters to keep an eye on. Michael Coyote, young right back coming through, another one who's a very good modern right back, very good on the ball. again, obviously helped by Italiano's tactics and his usage of fullbacks. His stats are obviously helped by that, but even when you watch him, he carries it well. He's got retains it well. So there's a few other exciting youngsters as well. And yeah, I do think, obviously, like we said, Fiorentina do need some work in terms of their squad building, because it's not exactly perfect, but there certainly are exciting players in the squad. So whoever comes in next at Fiorentina will have something to work with, which should be interesting. But anyway, our main focus, or rather more of our focus, was on Italiano in this episode. So let's talk about where he might end up next. Alex, any ideas?
Yeah, Napoli.
Okay, well, that's the episode. Thank you very much. No, but I think
we both say Napoli.
Yeah, I think we did mention him in our Napoli episode as well, didn't we?
I think he's the top pick.
Yeah, when Rudy Garcia was sacked. So, or before you said, when we did that. So yeah, I think, yeah, he's even been linked a fair bit. And yeah, it's a good time. I think he was even linked after Spalletti left. But yeah, I think it's better for him to go now than then, obviously, because I don't think he will do as well as Spalletti. So there are questions to be asked. Again, like we said about his sort of possession play and how he sets up. But I think he is probably best suited to Napoli because of the similarities between his style and Napoli's, you know, typical style over the last few years. And even this season, right, when Napoli are not doing so well, their possession numbers and stuff are also really high. So even like you said with Italiano, sometimes it's like they just keep having possession for the sake of it and not creating or progressing much. I think Napoli have been doing the same thing as well. So stylistically, I think it's a fit. And yeah, to be fair for Napoli, I don't think they can get too many better people in the current market than Italiano. So I think that's the one that definitely makes the most sense for all involved, really. I think he will do well at Napoli. Obviously, when you have the sort of improvement in player quality, that does help. So yeah, I think that's the most sensible one. What are your thoughts on him joining Napoli?
Yeah, I think it will be quite a big test for him, to be honest, because I think the next club he goes to is going to define his reputation for the next, like, 5-10 years. Like, if he goes to Napoli and he can't get their players to score goals, like, if Kvaratskhelia is still there, I'm assuming Austin was going to leave, but, like, yeah, like, Kvaratskhelia is still there and like, other quality players are there. And Napoli's recruitment is generally, I think it's fair to say, it's been better than Fiorentina's. If he can't get goals out of them, like, at least to a better degree than Garcia managed, then, like, he'll get sacked and he'll just be he'll be the coach. It was like, oh, Italiano, you know, he can't break down low blocks. That'll be his label, I think. So, yeah, the next job he goes to, he absolutely has to smash it. I agree. I think he is exactly the profile Napoli will go for. And based off this season, it's probably the best they can go for. Yeah, I think there's actually a lot of pressure on Italiano. This job needs to go well.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I think I actually remember, maybe I'm making this up, so I will check. But I'm pretty sure I remember Aurelio De Laurentiis saying somewhere at some point that whoever he hires basically has to have like over 50% possession or something. So yeah, I think in that respect, that's a good fit. But yeah, like I said, the big question
is... He plays a 4-3-3, so it's great.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. He said something about... Yeah, which is very weird to have the owner dictate the formation. But, well, that's De Laurentiis for you. But yeah, that was it. So, yeah, I think that in that sense, a good fit. But, yeah, I think big question is chance creation. But for the sake of discussion, Napoli is definitely first choice. But if that doesn't work out for whatever reason... I think it is interesting. I mean, yeah, he's in it. Because if he's definitely leaving Fiorentina this season, I think most of his eggs are in the Napoli basket because I can't really see him going anywhere else, which is like, you know, a step up from Fiorentina. I think you mentioned Juventus. We were talking before the recording. But that's, yeah, I think Juventus, he's definitely not going to be Juventus' first choice. That's a tricky one. I do think they have some, I mean, and then also there's a whole sort of question of a big stylistic shift that he, if he goes there, he'll have to implement from what Allegri's doing versus what he's doing, which are almost two polar opposites. So there's a few risks involved there, and I would say even more pressure than Napoli to perform to get results. So that's a risk. And then if you think outside Italy, I can't really think of anywhere he can go, which is like a real step up. Can you think of any clubs?
I can't. I'm trying to think. Maybe you could do what a couple of Italian coaches have done, like Farioli and Gattuso, and go to a club in Ligue 1. And maybe,
that's
maybe,
an interesting one.
I'm not sure it's really a step up, but if Paolo Fonseca leaves Lille, that might be an interesting place for him to go. But I kind of feel like you'd be doing, it'd be a step up for Fiorentina because you'll be more likely to get into European football, but you're sort of the same level of club.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't know if he could aim higher. Like, a club at the standing of Marseille and the squad talent would be good, but not the mental health of Marseille. So, yeah. Maybe a Dortmund if they,
yeah, I did think Dortmund,
if they finally get rid of Edin Terzic.
Yeah, but I think it's pretty set that like Terzic is going to move sort of out of coaching role and Shaheen is going to take over next season. So,
I mean, yeah, fair enough. If that, but if first coaching job, if that goes wrong, then Italiano might be able to. Maybe he's an option. But then again,
take
it's
a
very
break and watch what's happening.
Stylistic shift. Yeah.
Yeah. That would be interesting, I think. But yeah, unlikely. And then yeah, there's no one else. Oh, he should go to Bayern. There's no one else in the Bundesliga either. So yeah, it's yeah. I do think all his
no one else wants to go to Bayern either.
I do think most of his ex are in the Napoli basket, so that'll be an interesting one to follow. And yeah, if he does go there, it'll be interesting to see how they fare next season. But anyway, I think that's all we've got for this episode. So thank you very much, Alex, and thanks to everyone for listening. You can find both of us on Twitter. I'm at @ShilathNeil. Alex is at @EuroExpert_. And if you go to the @GetFootballEU account, you will find in the bio the links to all our country and league specific accounts, which you can follow to be updated with all the major action around the world and around Europe's big leagues as we approach the end of this season, both domestically and obviously in the continental competitions. So do keep an eye out on those. You can find links to all of that in like the description or show notes or whatever, where depending on what platform you're listening on. And if your platform allows it, please do rate the podcast as well if you enjoyed it. But thank you very much for listening. Thank you, Alex. We will be back next week, hopefully with a full cast, to discuss another interesting topic. Take care until then. Bye-bye.